bit of a delay here. It is January 15th, Sunday, 2012. So we have less than a year left to talk about things. Again, I apologize for the technical difficulties. Seems we keep trying to work out these glitches using this computer and not working. So we're here today. We took some hiatus away from the podcast, but we are back, and I know that you're all excited about that. All two of you, or how many of you are out there listening now and in the future. We are back now. And today we've got Mr. J and Jason on the show, who are going to share their thoughts about the universe and the meaning of life. I think we'd mentioned some factoids about Buffalo in the past, which I lost my factoids due to the technical difficulties. We'll get back to those in a bit. We did talk in one previous broadcast about the Bonus Army and how the Bonus Army was similar to the Occupy movement back in the 1930s. These guys were all veterans of World War I, and there were a few thousand of them. And basically, they marched in front of the White House and camped out there to address their grievances. And their grievances were that they wanted their bonus, their military bonus. And the government basically sent the military after them, basically to punish them for addressing their grievances. So it's an interesting thing, you know, there's been a pattern throughout history of the U.S. government going after protesters. Another thing that we were going to talk about, too, is conflict within the Occupy movement. It's not happening just in Buffalo, but in other Occupies as well, because basically what we have is a lot of people together, sharing space together, living in tents and whatnot. And, and I think what's happened is in our society, we kind of have become a bit of a dog-eat-dog society. And I think that, that includes those of us in the Occupy movement, that we're used to sort of being dog-eat-dog. And so I think it's sort of, learning to live together again, learning to come together as a people is a little bit of a challenge, even for those of us in the Occupy movement. Another thing to talk about as well is Buffalo, which is about a 6.5-hour drive from New York City, although it takes Mr. J 10 hours. 10 hours, did you say?
I haven't actually driven it, so I can't be sure.
Why did you tell me it took you 10 hours? Well, anyway, Mr. J says he thinks it takes longer than 6.5 hours, but usually most people take 6.5 hours, but Mr. J, he likes to take little rest stops on the way. Western New York, northwest of New York City, population 2010, and this is going from the U.S. Census Bureau, I've got the wrong city here, I'll pull that up in a minute. The city of Buffalo is one of the poorest cities in the country, and consequently, the population has been decreasing. It's actually been decreasing over a period of years now. And if you go to the U.S. Census Bureau's website, and you can go to quickfacts.census.gov, and you can look up Buffalo, New York, and you can get all this information. But basically, the population has just been decreasing over the years. Right now, as of 2010, it's 261,310 people in Buffalo. It's the second largest city in New York State, which I guess isn't saying much, New York City being a pretty big city. Percent change from 2000 to 2010 has been -10.7%. Back in 2000, the population was 292,648. So it went down from 292,000 something to 261,000 something. So it has been decreasing over the years. The percentage of African Americans in Buffalo, according to this statistic, is as of 2010, 38.6%. So a little over a third of Buffalonians are African American. About 50.4% of Buffalonians are white. So white people only make up about half the population here in Buffalo. So it's an interesting thing. According to this statistic, 10.5% of Buffalonians are of Hispanic or Latino origin. So Buffalo's it's a pretty mixed city. We've got some major universities here, State University of New York at Buffalo. We've got Canisius College, Medi College, State University College at Buffalo. Lots and lots of colleges. It really is a big college town, actually, so there are people from all over the world out here that come out here to study. So it's a pretty diverse city, just to give you an idea, but it's also a very, very poor city and a much blue-collar working-class city that's been struggling quite a bit over the past few years. Jason, you seem like you have something that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
What is it?
You mentioned about all the splinters within the Occupy movement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not only do we have now like Occupy Western New York,
mm-hmm.
but there's another splinter group that calls itself on Facebook Occupy Delaware Park. And I'm like,
really?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard about. When did that one start? You didn't start that one, did you?
I didn't start it.
No, but you were talking about it.
I actually asked Chris Phillips if he started it. He said no. And I guess I'm going to mention it to Kyla.
Wait, Mr. J, did you start it? Did you start Occupy Delaware Park?
No, I haven't.
I thought I saw you hanging around there once.
No. It was someone else that looked like me. Couldn't have been me.
I was walking my dog there once.
Oh, you don't have a dog. You don't have a dog. Well, you know what? I think it's kind of great. I mean, in a way, there's a problem with some conflict, some ego issues, and people trying to control things and whatnot, and people just disagreeing with each other. But in a way, I think it's great that people are taking the initiative to start their own Occupies, because I personally believe in public spaces. I believe mm-hmm. that people should be able to occupy anywhere they want. This is our land. I don't think everything should be privatized. People want to set up a tent somewhere and live there, I think they should be able to. And frankly, I think most people aren't going to set up tents if they can afford decent housing.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people are being forced into becoming homeless anyway. And I think that's why the Occupy movement is so important. What did you want to say more, Jason? I know you've got that newspaper
over
there. So.
Just to say, I read about a month ago or less in the Buffalo News that almost 50% of the U.S. population is either below poverty line or lower middle class. I mean, the middle class has basically disappeared in this country. I do not have it on me, but I read it on the Buffalo News. Almost one out of two people are struggling with poverty, and that's wrong. But what I got in the paper, there's an Associated Press article about a lady named Megan Barr, and the reporter is very critical of the Occupy movement. And when I read it, and I also showed Mr. J the other day, it says it was only the first paragraph starts New York. It was only a few nights after the Occupy protesters began sleeping in his church sanctuary when Reverend Bob Brashear realized that his laptop was missing. The refugees from Manhattan's Zuccotti Park had found their way to his cavernous Presbyterian church on a cold winter evening, hoping to stay for a few nights, maybe longer. It was the largest stopover for the nomadic group, she calls them nomadic, which has been living in a rotating series of churches since the city shut down its camp in November. So the article goes on, and then it talks about the homelessness. It's like, this is what Occupy encampment has become, a band of homeless protesters with no place to go. Amid accusations of drug use and sporadic theft, they've been sleeping on church pews for weeks, consuming at least $20,000 of the donations that Occupy Wall Street still has in its coffers. Their existence is being hotly debated at Occupy meetings. Are these people truly occupiers, quote-unquote occupiers, who deserve free food and a roof over their heads? We don't do that out of charity, said Ravi Ahmad, who works for Columbia University and volunteers with Occupy in her spare time. We do this so that whoever wants to work in the movement can work in the movement. This is meritocracy. But, and that's what's happening in Occupy Buffalo, I believe, but money is draining rapidly from Occupy's various bank accounts, which currently amounts to about $344,000. Including church maintenance costs and meals, living expenses are more than $2,000 per week. So now it goes. The movement, which denounces corporate excesses and economic inequality, has been fighting to stay afloat in the city where it began. Media attention and donations have dropped off. And although protesters regularly meet to plan demonstrations, recent marches have had none of the spectacle that captivated New Yorkers and watchers worldwide. So what the people basically they're basically against, I mean, the writer of the article, she's against what's going on. She is anti-Occupy. But I feel that the same pattern has been taking place in Niagara Square for at least 6 weeks here in Buffalo. And that's one of the reasons I just left. I'm tired of all those drug users, of all the alcoholism, of all the fighting, bickering. I'd like to see someone that actually does something. I think Occupy Western New York got some potential in it with Chris Phillips. But I think Chris got a little bit of an ego thing. But I don't know. I feel like, and the new, I don't know what, the Occupy Delaware Park movement, and I don't think that the ones that are in Niagara Square are carrying the torch. I think that just...
Well, I don't know if that's fair. I think some of them are. I don't think you can judge all of them by what a few people are not doing. My feeling about it is that there are two types of occupiers, you know, in Occupy Buffalo. There are the ones who are, you know, homeless because of their own problems, their character mm-hmm. flaws, behavior problems, drug problems, whatever. And there are those who are homeless or are poor because our system is screwed
mm-hmm.
up
yes.
and they can't make it. So there are those two factions there. And, you know, you whenever you have a community, you're always going to have some positives and negatives mm-hmm. there. And it's always the challenge. And I think that's why some people are against democracy, because it is so challenging to get diverse groups together. Mm-hmm. Mr. J, you're moving around a lot. Do you have something you wanted to say?
Well, not exactly on this theme. Maybe before we end.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, what is it that you wanted to say then? I don't want you to forget your thought.
I won't forget it.
You won't forget your thought? Okay. What did you want to add something?
Yeah. I think we got guest number 5 that is logged in. What I wanted to say is that... I sort of lost my... I'm still considering myself an occupier. And I myself has just moved on, basically, have just moved on and doing my own projects. This week, Mr. J and I met with Representative Louis Slaughter's, it's called Media Liaison, here in Buffalo. And she told me that Louis Slaughter has changed her mind since our phone conversation. And she's going to propose a constitutional amendment in Congress about the move to amend. So Mr. J and I felt it was a good achievement. Also, our friend John Buckley, I invited him and he came over, and it was a good day. Both Mr. J and John Buckley were able to talk about their causes, and that's one of the reasons I wanted them to be there, so they'll be able to air their grievances with the government. But Kathy Lenihan was very sympathetic. Now, I went to the Board of Education meeting with Mr. J, and I was just putting Amber Dixon, the superintendent, on the spot. What we wanted to do is make sure that, Buffalo ranks 79 out of 79 from Erie County municipalities. Student achievement has been tapering off. That's wrong.
Okay, you're going off topic here, and that's not the topic that we were talking about. Let's take a brief break here. We're going to listen to some really, really cool music.
From the traumatic, leaf-rustling earthquake that hit New York this July. Also, I'd like to apologize. apologize for all the Hurricane Irene hysteria this summer, but since you were such bitches about the snowstorm last year, you left me with little choice. Tonight I want to address the demonstrations currently taking place in Lower Manhattan in what is being called Occupy Wall Street. While these protests began here in New York, they have spread to dozens of other cities throughout the globe, proving once again that New York sets the trends and the rest of the world follows.
Wow. Mr. J., what do you think about these things?
Satirizing things is always a very good idea. Get beyond our anger and other emotional reactions if we go to humor as a healthy release of what's dealing with what's going on. And we need more creative humor. There's a lot of stuff out there that needs being made fun of, and it's more likely to be more effective than yelling and complaining or whining or otherwise disparaging the state of the union. Because we do have to share, to a certain extent, historically, some blame for the condition we're in. Because
yes.
We are citizens in this country, and there's been too much complaining, whining, but yet considering ourselves powerless, in spite of, you know, in the face of the power of this and that institution and everything else. But since it's the government of the people, by the people, well, until we acknowledge that it's supposed to be by the people and we have a strong role to take, then it will not be for the people, but it will be for the special interest to make appropriate string pulling and wielding of favors and dollars to seduce and sometimes very willingly leadership at high levels. And particularly Congress is very complicit. The idea of being a leader, standing for certain principles in this country, is very weak. There are a handful of people that have it together, but they are sit there in the face of vast apathy and anger and objections by their fellow congressmen, this is senators and House of Representatives, going along with the status quo.
Okay, great. I also wanted, like, in keeping with the topic of how we the people are responsible and what's happening with the Occupy movement, the infighting that's happening, I just want to read a little bit about the 60s by Todd Gitlin. First of all, he talks about how women broke away from the movement in the 60s because women felt disenfranchised and then started a women's movement. He talks about Marilyn Salzman Webb, who spoke in front of some anti-war activists back in 1969. She basically said in front of, and now keep in mind, she's speaking in front of some political activists, okay? These are people who are hippies. These are people who are fighting for a better world, blah, 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 okay? And she says to them, "We as women are oppressed. We, as supposedly the most privileged in this society, are mutilated as human beings so that we will learn to function within a capitalist system." As she warmed to the subject, pandemonium broke out in the crowd below her. So basically, the crowd got pretty darn upset. Let me just turn down the volume here. I hope I'm not getting an echo. That's one technical difficulty we've been having. So basically, she's just talking about women being oppressed. Pandemonium broke out. She plunged on, denouncing a system that views people as objects and property, and a cheer went up. She heard shouts, "Take her off the stage and F her." I'm not going to say what the four-letter word was, even though we're not a big talk show. "Take her down a dark alley. Take it off." This was not a burlesque joint. This was the movement she knew and loved. She finished shaking. And this is taken from Todd Gitlin, 60, his book 60s, Years of Hope, Days of Rage. Okay, so the women broke off from the movement, which weakened the movement a little bit because the women left. Okay, and then eventually what happened was later on there was this division between people in the left, what he calls the left, the anti-war activists, the civil rights activists. He later writes, the new left's torment, the torment of all radical student movements, was that relatively privileged people were fighting on behalf of the oppressed, blacks, Vietnamese, the working class. Committed to a revolution, it did not have the power to bring about. The movement cast about for a link with forces that might have had that power. Basically, what he's talking about is how eventually the movement became, you know, a bunch of rich kids who were just sort of rebelling against their parents, and they couldn't really get enough working class people involved in this movement. He also writes, the anti-war movement was like an audience gathered for a performance taking place behind drawn curtains. There were offstage screens. Once in a while, a functionary would appear in front of the curtain and announce that difficulties were being tended to. Anyway, he just goes on to talk about how the movement began to fall apart and how the newer leftists were fighting with the older leftists. And then he talks about sectarianism, you know, sects, groups that came together. He particularly talks about the Weathermen, which were a radical group. And he writes, the left is its own worst enemy. These fights among brothers depress me enormously. The left is its own worst enemy here, and I'm glad we're in no position to take power, because if we did, the only honorable sequel would be abdication. And I just think it's interesting because it seems kind of like we're dealing with that. I mean, that's a challenge within the Occupy movement, is how do you get more working class people in the movement? When it seems to me that working class people typically are demoralized, and it tends to be the people who come from the wealthier families who have the self-esteem to say, yes, we want more, and to demand more. How do you get poor people who are not demoralized, who are not, you know, giving up and ready to abuse drugs and drink and just accept their lot? How do you find the few poor people who still have some inner strength, who are ready to, you know, to stand up for what they believe in? I wonder whether Mr. J, do you have any comments on that? Do you have any ideas on that?
Well, that's a big challenge. Because we happen to be in a particularly apathetic or cynical period for a large part of the population, regardless of that, even with the poor, being widely entertained by many means. I think that some fundamental things are going to have to change, and I don't know if we're going to have blood in the streets, as one expression goes, before we're all done here, before some people at high levels start waking up to reality. We have a lot of non-reality out there. I'll give you an example. I was going to allude to it earlier, and we'll run out of time soon. We've been having a lot of noise out there, and I advisedly use the word noise, about the Republican primaries, candidates, and all that sort of thing. Total waste of time. Never, to my knowledge, not that I sit there and listen, but I have my sources, the fundamental financial fraud that continues to go on, the continual buying out, the bailing out foreign banks and the whole international system, all of that stuff, no one talks about that. The roots of joblessness is the total lack of development and proper investment in the economy. Total silence. Talking the usual personalities and this, that, and the usual buzzwords. Has that ever accomplished anything? The media and all the candidates have learned absolutely nothing in the abuses that have occurred over the last, shall we say, 12 years, if not 4-6 decades. Mm-hmm. So,
well, the media is run by a handful of corporations. I'm not sure if it's, I mean, they just really are, you know, they can't say anything negative about their sponsors.
Well, I think that they're also editorially controlled at a high level so that we keep the population in Fantasyland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Disney owns ABC, right? ABC's owned by Disney. Mm-hmm. So, of course, obviously, they're not going to say anything about Disney that's bad about Disney. And we know what Reverend Billy thinks of Disney, right? Actually, I'll see if I can find that video clip.
Yeah, I got something about the women movement. I noticed it in Occupy Buffalo that I didn't notice it from the get-go because everybody was so, seemed like very, you know, talking about equality. But there was one incident that really burned me up. There was a women caucus were meeting at the Spot Coffee for to deal with the perceived discrimination, which I wasn't aware of at that time. And a man that was camping at the Occupy Buffalo at Niagara Square, Marco, was stalking them and following them around to spy on them. And when I learned about it, it really upset me because I felt like, why is he doing it? Why is he putting, you know, they wanted to meet at a safe place. And then I noticed that a few people, few female friends at the camp told me that there is a discrimination against women at the Occupy Buffalo. And I started noticing it, and it's just sheer wrong, you know? I'm totally, completely against discrimination against women. And
okay, well, yeah, we know that. And that's, you know, and it, again, it, that's not everyone at Occupy Buffalo. That's some people at Occupy mm-hmm. Buffalo who feel that way and some other people who might be initiating those things. And I think the point is, like, just to be able to work out those problems instead of, you know, having a situation where people are unable to work out those conflicts and you know, the censorship that's taken place where some people at Occupy Buffalo don't want people talking about it and that sort of thing. I think that's the thing I dispute, because I think people should talk about problems. That's how you solve them, facing mm-hmm. up to them and talking about them. Because there's actually, you know, there are people who are saying there is no discrimination against anyone at the Occupy movement. And then there are other people who are saying that they feel uncomfortable mm-hmm. about speaking their views and whatnot, and that, you know, they feel sort of unwelcome, both women and men, who approached Occupy Buffalo and just felt that, you know, Occupy Buffalo was not very welcoming to them. So I think it's just something to address, but now it looks like, you know, people have just decided to branch off and start their own Occupy in Delaware Park, I guess. And do they have a Facebook site?
They have a Facebook site. There are 21 people like them. It just started, I think, 2 nights ago. Someone posted it on the Liberate Buffalo website and on Occupy.
Liberate Buffalo is an organization that's against the Occupy movement. I just want to make that little disclaimer there.
Mm-hmm, but also on Occupy Western New York and on Occupy Buffalo website itself mm-hmm. and a few others.
Okay. So they just posted that they have an Occupy Delaware Park. Okay, well, that sounds interesting, because Delaware Park is sort of a place that people occupy anyway. Well, that sounds interesting, Mr. J and Jason. I think we're winding down now with your you guys want to add anything?
Let me, Mr. J go.
No, we're
right.
Good.
You're good? All right. And I'm going to play some Reverend Billy, mm-hmm. and we'll be winding down. Well, thanks a lot, guys, for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
We'll be back again probably in a couple weeks. We're listening to a little Reverend Billy.
But there's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You
day of judgment, God is calling. On their knees, the world hears our calling. Thank you, curses. Yeah, but Satan is laughing, he spreads his wings.
But I am not in the big club. By the way, it's the same big club they used to beat you over the head with all day long. They tell you what to believe all day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hardworking people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hardworking people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all, at all, at all. Yeah. You know? And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to
judge.
That's what the owners want. The fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue dick that's being jammed up their assholes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, but you have to be asleep to believe it.
I don't know, it was maybe a year or two ago, not too long ago, he died, lived to a ripe old age, and to his 70s, I believe, and he's an interesting case. He was an old hippie. If you go on the internet and you do a search on George Carlin, you can see pictures of him from back in the 60s when he was first starting out. He looks like this very clean-cut guy,
within a few short years, he just turned into this hippie. So I don't know what happened, but he started getting radical. And I apologize for the strong language if anyone out there is offended. But it is what it is. You know, he was just being very honest, brutally honest. And I think I'm just going to close the show by reading a little bit from Todd Jitlin's 60s, the 60s, Years of Hope, Days of Rage. I'm going to read a little bit from this book about what happened, some of the things that happened to the 60s movement. Around 1970, Nixon tried to crush as much as possible of the anti-war movement. The FBI had finally come to the conclusion that the new left was a force to be reckoned with, not just an infiltration zone for the Communist Party. New leftists were gradually added to J. Edgar Hoover's security index, a master file of candidates for roundup during a national emergency. So there was a plan even back then, which would be, about 40 years ago, to round up people for national security reasons, of course, to round up protesters. So the McCarthy era apparently did not end in the 50s. And the author of this book, Todd Jitlin, he actually refers to himself as having been tracked down through pretext calls by FBI agents, and I'm not sure what he means by that. But he describes what he had read about himself. Because of Gitlin's background as a writer, my favorite memo reads, it is not believed to be in the Bureau's best interest to interview him at this time, unquote. It must be interesting, I guess, to find a file about yourself from the FBI and to read something like that. He adds, the CIA's Operation Chaos, formerly the Special Operations Group for Movement Surveillance, grew. The Nixon administration used militants, including agent provocateurs, to taint moderates on the principle that the more destructive the protests, the easier it was to discredit. It authorized wiretaps, grand jury investigations, felony prosecutions. It tried to intimidate news media deemed too sympathetic to the protests. State and local police contributed their own burglaries, stole mailing lists, instigated harassment by landlords, and disconnection by phone companies. Eventually, even mild liberals were placed on a White House enemies list. With Nixon trying to spin an aura of statesmanship, the bad cop rhetoric was assigned to Vice President Spiro T. Agnew, who contributed blasts against small cadres of professional protesters, nattering nabobs of negativism and the effete corpse of impudent snobs who characterized themselves as intellectuals. Indeed, Agnew proclaimed his own version of the sleeping dog strategy. If in challenging we polarize the American people, he said on October 30th, 1969, I say it is time for a positive polarization, a constructive realignment. It is time to rip away the rhetoric and to divide on authentic lines. It is time to discard the fiction that in a country of 200 million people at the time, everyone is qualified to quarterback the government. Let me just repeat that last line. It is time to discard the fiction that in a country of 200 million people, everyone is qualified to quarterback the government. So what he's saying is, it's fiction. How can we possibly believe that with all these people, millions of people, that all of these people are qualified to run the government? And I think that's been a theme, you know, pretty much throughout history. You know, there are a lot of people who don't believe in democracy, don't believe in the people having a voice, that the people are not qualified. And it's an interesting belief, too, because, you know, we do, here in the United States, we live in a country in which education is very, very expensive. And, you know, it's arguable that, you know, poor people really don't have the right to a higher education in this country. And how qualified can people be to participate in government when people are not able to get much of an education due to their financial background? And there really is a certain amount of responsibility, I think, that goes with living in a democratic society. And if we the people want to have a voice in how things are run, we need to be intelligent, we need to be educated, we need to be paying attention to what's happening in the world, and we need to have some knowledge of history and have some knowledge of how our government could be run or should be run. So that's just my little viewpoint on that one. And I think the Occupy movements are great because they provide a chance for people to learn to live and work together again. So while there are some conflicts within the movements and there are some people breaking away and, you know, there is a somewhat of infighting, I think it's a process, and I think we need to learn how to get along together. I think we need to learn how to live in tents and how to share and how to get diverse groups of people talking to each other and getting along. I think that this is something our society is missing. I think as Americans, we've become accustomed to communicating through text messaging and the internet and even shows like this, which is okay, but I think we need to learn how to communicate directly and more intimately with each other again. And again, it's a process. And I think what we're finding out in the Occupy movements is that it does take time and it's not so easy to do. And, you know, we just have such a diverse population in this country that it is a challenge, but we can do it. We can live up to the challenge, and we need to prove to ourselves and to everyone else in our community that we are up for the challenge. So what do you think out there? Are you up for the challenge? Do you believe in democracy? Do you want people to have a voice? Because I really think that's what the Occupy movement is about. It's about people taking back their power and saying that, yeah, we have a voice, we can have a voice, and there's lots that we can do. And, you know, we the people are something to be, we're a force to be reckoned with. So, anyhow, we're going to sign off today. And again, we keep having technical difficulties, and I'm just going to have to work this out. I'm going to have to host a show on my own with no listeners and just test it and try to figure out why we're having so many technical difficulties. Because right now I have 3 computers on and 2 microphones on and 2 speakers, and it's just the bastion of technology, and I'm probably being exposed to all sorts of electromagnetic frequencies here. So, you know, I'm sure that would give some conspiracy theorists a bit of a day. So we're going to sign off today. It's almost 20 after 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Sunday evening, January 15th, 2012, Buffalo, New York. My name is Buffy Lowe. Tonight we also spoke with Mr. J and J's son, both sympathizers with the Occupy Buffalo movement and the Occupy movement as a whole. Buffalo, New York, once again, it is the second largest city in New York State. But we also have an Occupy Rochester, and which, you know, is about an hour's drive from Buffalo. And now we have also an Occupy Delaware, apparently, Delaware Park, and an Occupy Western New York. So why don't you start your own Occupy out there, anybody who's listening? You know, why not? That's why this show's called Occupy Buffalo, Occupy Yourself. It's about taking back your own power, not just as an individual, but as a community. We need to take back our power as a people. So I'm signing off. We'll be back probably in about 2 more weeks, Sunday evening, around 8 o'clock in the evening, Eastern Standard Time, if we can get our technology working here and work out our technical difficulties. Thanks to everyone who, in the future, who listens to this podcast. Check us out. Even if you disagree with us, we want to hear you.